All right, so we are holding on the seventh line of the wide lines on static test number out. The line we can talk about. Okay, we finished off yesterday. The last thing we said was that you have all the nevuahs about Yemos HaMashiach. We said those are for Yemos HaMashiach as opposed to Olam Haba. It's something which no eye other than the Eveshters has ever perceived. It's something that's higher even than being described by the Nevi'im. And we said, on the other hand, Shmuel says differently, because Shmuel says that Yemos HaMashiach themselves are just going to be the world that's still going to have its essential, its same teva that it has now, just there won't be Shivud Malchus.
One opinion says
change. The one opinion is that it'll change. The other is that it won't. And the Rambam we mentioned brings both, which again, some of the Mechorishim on the Rambam say that the Rambam would agree, would say that it's going to have that the nature of things is in some ways is going to change, and in some ways will not. And therefore, he brings both ideas. Okay. So now, in this connection, since we mentioned this idea that you have what the Nevi'im said versus Ayin L'Rosa, the Kim Zolosecha, things that only the Eveshter has seen, here's another example. All the promises that the Nevi'im said of the great things that are, of the great rewards that are going to happen, are all for the Baalei Teshuva. Aval Tzadikim Gemurim, but the reward that's available, that's reserved for the Tzadikim Gemurim, is again, Ayin L'Rosa, the Kim Zolosecha. That's something that only the Eveshter has seen. That's something that's indescribable even by the Nevi'im.
Wait,
however, we're talking about, in other words, within Gan Eden itself, within Olam Haba itself, Gan Eden, Olam Haba, whatever. So there's a difference between the reward for the Baalei Teshuva and the reward for the Tzaddikim. So Rav Chiya Bar Abba is saying the reward for the Baalei Teshuva, that's what the Nevi'im are describing. The various descriptions in the Nevi'im of the, such as the descriptions of those that will have the close experience of the Shekhinah, and that will rejoice with Hashem, and Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, etc. That's all describing the level of the Baalei Teshuva. The Tzaddikim are on a much higher level than that.
You said
the Baalei Teshuva are on a higher level. Well, Rav Chiya Bar Abba says, disagrees with what Rav Abba says. I'm a Rebbe, whatever. The place where the Baalei Teshuva are able to stand, Tzaddikim are not able to stand there. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Shalom, Shalom, Lodachik, V'lakarev. As the Pasuk says, peace, peace for the far and for the near, implying Bereshav, Rachik, V'hadakarev. First the far and then the near. And my rochik, what does far mean? Rochik to meikra, somebody who originally was far and now has come close because they did tshuva, and we see that they're being placed first, ahead of my karev to meikra. What does karev mean? The people who were close to begin with, the tzaddikim. So therefore, according to Rav Abahu, it comes out, karev to meikra dehashta, they are people who were close at the beginning and are still close. So therefore, we see from that Jerush, we see that the Baalei Teshuva are on a higher level than the Tzaddikim, because they're placed first Larochik and then Lakarid.
Does that really mean that?
Well, Rabbi Yechanan, whereas Rabbi Yechanan disagrees with that, what Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said about the Tzaddikim's reward being higher than the Baalei Teshuva was in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. So what does Rabbi Yechanan answer to that? He says, no, the Pasuk means the other way around. Larochik means to Rochik me'Avera. The word Rochik means the one who's always been far away from Avera his whole life. So he's been a Tzaddik Gomer his whole life. Karev means to Karev me'Avera v'nistrachik mena. The Karev, who's mentioned second in the Pasuk, is the one who was closer to doing Avera and now has distanced himself from it by doing Teshuva. Well, why not? It doesn't say Lodachos on the card of who
is. Shuva is not close to Averis.
He was close to Averis, and then he distanced himself from it, which makes it means that he went through a much bigger Nisayan. There's many, many different explanations in many different Tzvarim about what's the idea, in what sense is the Baal Shuva greater than the Tzaddik. One of the many explanations is the fact that he has a much greater Nisayan, because he knows he has a greater Yetzirah. Right. So in that sense, he was Korev Me'Avera v'Nistrachek Memeno. That's a great, tremendous thing, that he was close to Averis, and now he distanced himself from it, which makes it a much more powerful thing than a Tzaddik Gomer. There's many other reasons.
So, wait a minute. Rabbi Yochanan
are higher than Tzaddikim. He says, very nice, they're great people. On the other hand, the fact is they're placed second in the Pasuk, because he learns that Korev means the people who were close to Avera and now are far away from it, as opposed to the Rochek, the person who was never involved with Averis in the first place. Rabbi Yechanan holds is on a higher level. Okay.
So Rochok means...
So of course, you have two different ways. Rochok would mean Rochok Averis, would be the Tzaddikim. Whereas according to Rav Abahu, no, Rochok means the one who was originally far from all the coasts, the one who was originally far from Eveshter, and now has done Teshuva and is close. Okay. Fine. Another thing, all the Nevi'im, all the promises that the Nevi'im said of all the rewards that are going to happen are only for Lamasi Bithu of Tamid Chacham, or for people who they themselves may not be Tamid Chachamim, but they try to be close in whatever way possible to Tamid Chacham. And they marry off their daughter to a Tamid Chacham, or Lo Yisa Prakmati to a Tamid Chacham, they do business with the Talmud Chacham, meaning, in other words, like the Talmud Chacham invests money with them and they manage it. Or the Mahanan of Talmud Chacham and Nechasav, or a person who allows Talmud Chacham to benefit from his Nechasim, he's the one who deserves all the rewards that the Nevi'im promised. Avol Talmud Chachamim Asman, but again, the Talmud Chacham themselves, who they themselves actually learned Torah, the Yisachars, again, Ayin Lo Dasa, Elikim Zolot Sefa, again, they have a reward that's indescribable even by the Nevi'im.
Meaning it's higher,
yeah. My Ayin Lo Dasa. So what is this that we're talking about? What is this something that no eye has seen other than yours, the Eishta? What specific thing are we talking about? Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, the Yain Hamashuma Banov of Meshesh Mebereshis. Rabbi Shurban Levi says, this refers to the wine that has been preserved inside its grapes ever since Sheshes Mebereshis, which of course is a metaphor for high and deep secrets of Torah that nobody has ever comprehended before. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. No, so we're saying nobody. And we're saying even the Nevi'im have not been able to describe that. It's a whole different level of Torah.
So
that's what we're saying. There's three different. So far, we have three different explanations. We had one. So far, we had one at the end. We said yesterday that there's a difference between Yemosa Mashiach and Olam Haba. That Olam Haba is going to have the Ayin Lo Rasa of the Kimzul Sefer. Number two, we said is there's a difference between the Tzaddikim and the Baalei Teshuva. And number three, there's a difference between the Zvulims and the Yisachars.
Well, that we know.
So that's what we're saying. So in each of those second categories, Olam Haba, the Tzaddikim, according to the Priya Ba'aba, and the Yisachars, all are going to experience what Ayin Lo Rasa Elikim Zolot Sefer, what no eye other than the Eidishtis have ever seen, namely, according to Rabbi Shurban Levi, that refers to this wine that's been preserved since Sheshes Mebereshis.
According to these statements, it's more important to learn Torah than to take care of another Jew.
No, it's not. First of all, a person can do both, right? A person can learn Torah but second of all, also, no, you have people who are capable of learning Torah, and then you have these Zvulims who are capable of supporting them. Fine, the Zvulims get a great reward. We're saying, but after all, the learning Torah itself is the primary thing. The Zvulun is there in order to assist him. So fine, if you're capable of being a Zvulun, that's what the Eved should put you in the world for. But nevertheless, you should be.
It's only primary if it brings you to my state.
That is true. Also, well, actually, the Gemara discusses that in some places. We
but
say on the one hand, we said on the. We're not talking about the Yisachar who only. We're not talking about a person who only learns Torah and does new mitzvahs. Chas v'shalom. A kol omer in the Torah after the Torah anyway. He does do mitzvahs, but we're talking about Torah is the primary thing. You can have the ultimate level of that, like Rav Shimon ben Yochai, that Torah also in Nasai, and he doesn't have to stop for many mitzvahs ma'asiyos. You can have a lower level where a person does have to interrupt his Torah for various mitzvahs ma'asiyos, but nevertheless, yeah. And nevertheless, Torah is still on top of the heap. We're going to talk about that more on the day in connection with something else. So wait. Okay. Rish Lakish says this Ayin Lo Rasa, the Kim Zol Secha, refers to Eden, which no human being has, which no eye of any created being has ever seen. Vim Toima Adam Heichandor. So you can ask, where did Adam Rishon live then? The answer is Bagan. He lived in the garden, not in Eden itself. Vim Toima Gan Hu Eden. So you're going to say, isn't it the same thing? Gan Eden, isn't it? The answer is no. Talmud Lomar, but no Yotzim Eden Lahashkas is Agan. No, the pasuk says in Bereishis, a river comes out from Eden to water the Gan, implying that the Gan is a lower level. Implying that the Gan is a lower level than Eden. So you have Gan Eden Atachten, Gan Eden Elyon. You have Keser versus the lower midis. Whatever the point is, that Eden is a higher level. Eden is a higher level which no being has ever experienced. So that's what's reserved. That's what's reserved for Olam Haba. Okay. Fine. So now we're done. We've ended the sugya about Mashiach, and now actually we're going to be getting back to the various things in the Mishnah. We started by saying the Mishnah had said Elu Sheinam Chelik Olam Haba, and we said somebody who doesn't believe that Tchias Amesim is Minat Torah. That led us into discussion of Tchias Amesim, and then that led us from one thing to another, which took up the last shook up the last nine blocks. Now we're getting back to the Mishnah and the various categories in it. We said v'ha'omer ein Torah min ha'shamayim. Although the next category in the Mishnah was somebody who claims that the Torah is not min ha'shamayim. So we're going to expand on that. What does that mean? Tanan Rabbanan. When the pasuk says ki dvar Hashem baza the ethnic umitzvase, it's really the ethnic baza hefar. The pasuk says that a person baza, he mocked, he embarrassed or whatever. He thought lightly of the words of the Torah, ves mitzvase hefar, and he violated his mitzvah. And the pasuk says he kares, he'll get kares. So what does this mean? This refers to the Dvar Hashem Baza, refers to somebody who says that the Torah is not Min HaShemayim, that Moshe made it up, or whoever. Davar, another explanation, Dvar Hashem Baza, what does it mean? The person who treats the word of Hashem lightly, Zeh Apikoros. This refers to an Apikoros, which the Gemara is going to define later what the exact definition of an Apikoros is. Another explanation is that the pasuk is referring to two different kinds of things. One is megalaponim b'Torah. One is somebody who is chutzpitik against the Torah, which again, on Amud Beis, the Gemara will give us some examples of it. And when it says that he violated his mitzvah, this refers to somebody who is mefer, who undoes the bris in the flesh. In other words, this is a concept called Moshe Farlase that we had it way back in Yevamos. We talked about it sporadically here and there, that you have a person who had a bris milah, but then he's embarrassed of it in front of the goyim or whatever, so he stretches the skin in order to conceal it. That's made for bris vasa. And the pasuk says on both of them, hikores tikores, meaning hikores lo'olam hazeh, tikores lo'olam haba. It says that he'll get kores in this world and in the next world, which we learned at the beginning of the parak. We had a machlokes Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, how exactly to understand from the pasuk. Everybody agreed that it is lo'olam hazeh, lo'olam haba. They just learned it in different ways from the pasuk. Mikan Omer Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi, on the basis of this, Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi taught the following, which we have as a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Hamachal of a kodshim, somebody who desecrates the kodshim. So, for example, the actual kodshim of the Beis Mikdash or other things that are supposed to be holy. Bamavazes amoyedos, so somebody who treats the moyedos, meaning chol moyed, lightly. Like he does work on it, that's osur, or in particular, for example, like you have, for example, sometimes you figure you're going to be off from work doing chol moyed, so I'm going to save this particular project for chol moyed and do it then when I'm not working anyway. That kind of thing is osur. That's mevazeh samoyed.
What's the equivalence between the two?
Let's learn the five things, and I'll tell you what the Tiferes Yisrael says about it. Okay. Somebody who violates the covenant of Avraham, as we just said, Moshe Chorlosei. Somebody who literally Megalopana means he uncovers faces. So we'll talk about it on Amud Beis. There's a couple of possibilities. It can mean that he misinterprets the Torah. It can mean chutzpidik regarding the Torah. We'll talk about it later. Shalai Ka'alocha, in an improper way. Or somebody who embarrasses somebody else and makes his face turn white in public. All those things. Such a person, even if other than that, he learns Torah and he does Ma'isim Tovim, ain't like Chelos on the Mabba. Now, how does Rabbi Elazar HaMadoi get all these five things from what we learned before? So the Pharisee Surah brings an interesting idea. He says each of these is a different kind of kfira. Hamachalos HaKodshim implies somebody who says that there's no Kodshim, there's nothing holy in the world at all. The world has no creator, therefore there's nothing holy. Mevazeh HaMoyedos includes somebody would be what the basis of why he does that is because he believes that there's an Eibishter, he doesn't believe he created the world. So therefore, like Shabbos, he believes maybe in an Eibishter. The Rambam defines, you have the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam. One of them is that the Eibishter exists. Another one is that there's only one. Another one is and another one is that there's no other existence other than him, that he created the world. So, and the Rambam describes in Hilchos Teshuvah, the Rambam describes the various categories of minim and apikorsim and whatever, where you have differences. You have a person who claims that there's no God at all, and you have one who claims that fine, there's a God, but he didn't create the world. The world has always existed.
That to me is totally ridiculous.
Well, you had
why he called a God if he didn't create.
Because he does other things, whatever. But for example, you had for example Aristotle's philosophy included the idea that the world has always existed.
That's more logical.
Fine, but whatever. The point is, so in principle, he believed in some kind of God. It was a Greek, whatever. There's a Kabbalah that he became a ger. I don't know how historically accurate it is. All right, anyway. The point is that, so therefore, b'chalos hakodshim is somebody who denies the Eibishter altogether, says the Tiferes Yisrael. Mevazeh HaMoedos amounts to somebody who doesn't believe that the Eibishter created the world. Therefore, Shabbos is nothing special. And by extension, the other Yom Tovim and Chol HaMoed and whatever are nothing special.
Nothing special.
Yeah. Vamei Kabrisa Shalavraham Avinu is somebody who denies the uniqueness of the Jewish people. Torah is somebody who denies the Torah or some part of it. And Malvin Pnechaver Abraham, if he denies that a human being is anything special in the world, that they wish to create human beings as distinct from all the other creatures. So each of those is a type.
Being Jewish or not?
No, it's so that Mefer Brisa Shal Avraham Avinu is the uniqueness of the Jewish people. Malvin Pnechaver Abraham is more generally that he denies that human beings are any different, let's say, than the monkeys or whatever. So those five, he says, therefore, are all forms of kfira. And that's why they're all included in the same category. Interesting, by the way, that Rambam says on all these things, when the Rambam describes them in Hilchos Teshuvah as things that a person the person loses his place in Olam Haba, the Rambam uses the expression of a person habitually does these things, meaning a person, a one-time thing, not necessarily. And Rabbi Heber brings in Kol Yisrael, I don't remember if it's his own thing or from somebody else, that maybe indeed that's why this Mishnah is not an Ar Perek in Sanhedrin, but rather in Pirkei Avot. If it was an R Perek in Sanhedrin among those who are in the Perek and Alaba, it would imply even one time is enough to lose it. But like this, okay. All right. Tanya, we learn in another Braise. What does it mean, Kidvara Shabbaza? What does it mean the
Which
person?
Mission you're referring to?
It's a mission in Perek Yavet. It's in Perek Yavet. This one that we just said, the laws are majority, I'm a Machalos, the Kachem, it's in Perek Yavet. Tanya, Kidvara Shabbaza. Speaking of Pirkei Avos, by the way, I forgot to mention something yesterday. We were talking about Rav Hillel and his opinion that Eid Mashiach leads Yisrael, which you find so hard, and I told you all the different explanations in the Parshim. Some say, actually, that the Hillel that we say in Perek Bey is Pirkei Avos, Hillel Lema Al Tifrish Min HaTzibur, Afu Rogo Gur L'Sachas, some say that it's him. Yeah? Okay. Anyway. All right. Tanya, we learn another Braise. Kidvar Hashem Bozer, what does it mean when the Pasuk says that he mocked the word of Hashem? Zeha Oyma Ein Torah Meshamayim. Again, this means somebody who says the Torah is not Meshamayim. And let's expand on that. Vafilo Oma Kol HaTorah Kulam Meshamayim. Even if he says, fine, I agree that most of the Torah is Min HaShemayim, except for this one pasuk, which I don't believe the Eivishter said, Ela Moshe V'Piyatme, this particular pasuk I think Moshe made up on his own. Zo, Kidvar Hashem Boza, that's another example of Kidvar Hashem Boza. He's mocking the word of the Eivishter because the whole Torah is one seamless thing. You can't split it up into parts. But Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, we say, for example, that Mishnah Torah was said by Moshe. Klolos Shem Mishnah Torah, Moshe V'Piyatme Omer. But it's not, when we say that Moshe said them, it's not like he just made it up on his own. It's Shechinim and Averis and Teresh Groinoi. It is most of Sefer Dvarim is written in Moshe's voice, but it's the Eivishter speaking through him. It's the Eivishter speaking through, in other words, the first four Chumashim is the Eivishter dictating to Moshe, and Moshe writes it down, therefore it's in third person. Sefer Dvarim is the Eivishter speaking through Moshe's throat. Shechinim and Averis and Teresh Groinoi from Moshe. So it's written in Moshe's voice, but still, it's the Eivishter still saying it. It never talks about Nesicha, that the idea that therefore Sefer Dvarim is sort of like a transition between the other Chumashim and Nach, which is on a lower level of Nevuah. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Even if somebody claims the whole, fine, I agree the whole written Torah is Min HaShemayim, but except for this particular detail of, for example, Chaseiris V'Yaseiris, which words are supposed to be written with or without a Vav or a Yud, or he doesn't believe in this particular Kavah Chomer, or Megzeder Shavah Zu, or this particular Megzeder Shavah. So Rashi says we're talking about, in other words, I mean, we have throughout Shas, we have that Chachamim argue on Kavah Chomer and Megzeder Shavah. That's fine, but we're talking about over here, he learned it from his Rebbe, but now he doesn't believe it. Right. And then different Mephoshim talk about maybe it means that he denies the whole concept of Kavah Chomer, or he says that the various places in the Torah, you have psukim themselves. You have a number of psukim and chumash that express the idea of a kavah chomer clearly in and of themselves. For example, in Parshas Bereishis, where, you know, the whole thing with Lemech over there, if Kayin is going to be avenged after seven generations, how much more so Lemech after 77? So the concept of a kavah chomer you find in chumash. If a person denies that concept, that's what we're talking about. So Zeru Kidvar Hashem Baza, all of those are examples of Kidvar Hashem Baza, that he's mocking the word of Eivishter.
And therefore he gets
Torah, as we said. Tanya. These are all forms of Akkur Kursus, yeah. Tanya, Hoyer of Meir, we have other explanations of what Kidvar Hashem Baza means. Number one, Haloimed Torah of Ein Malamda, if somebody learns Torah, but he doesn't teach it. Zo, Kidvar Hashem Baza, this also is included in Kibbutz. We're not talking about where he doesn't have the ability to teach. We're talking about where he has the ability, but he doesn't think that it's important to teach. Also, the Vort is, since he says Kidvar Hashem Baza, implies he doesn't care to use his Dibur to give over Torah. Dvar, Meloshin Dibur, Meloshin speech. Yeah. That's what it means. In other words, but how do we know? In other words, how do we know that it means? How do we know that? How does your mayor know that Kibbara Hashem Baal means somebody who doesn't want to teach? Because he's not using his words. He's not using his Dvar. Okay. Rav Nosson, I'm a kol mishayin mashgiach ala Mishnah. Rav Nosson says that Dvar Hashem Baza is somebody who does not pay attention to the Mishnah. So Rashi says, for example,
he pays attention to the halacha,
but not to the Mishnah. Well, the Mishnah is the fun is the basis of the halacha, it's the basis of Torah Shabbat Peh. So Rashi says, like he pretends as though the Mishnah is not and is nothing important. Some of them, of course, should understand it that way. Others understand Mishnah in the sense of reviewing what he's learning. He doesn't consider it important to review what he learned. And in particular, Marashah says again, Dvarim Aloshim Dibur, Kidvar Hashem Baza, he thinks that it's good enough to just review it with his eyes and not with his mouth, then that's included in Kidvar Hashem Baza.
You have to review it
verbally. No, not necessarily aloud, but verbally at least. We'll talk about it at the top of Omid Beis, we'll talk about it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Rav Nehoroyim, a kosher epshalasik v'torah v'ena osik. Rav Nehoroyim says that Dvar Hashem Baza includes somebody who is able to learn Torah, and he doesn't. He doesn't spend his time learning Torah because he uses it for other purposes. The Alter Rebbe brings us on the first page of Tanya as one of the proofs that a Beinoni can't be somebody who's half mitzvah and half avodah, because we say in the Gemara here that if the person has the opportunity to learn Torah and misses it, he's already called, if we're calling him a drosha and calling him Dvar Hashem Baza, there can't possibly... The pastors it made. Yes, I mean,
like
it sounds... Right. It might mean that he's not oisik in Torah at all. It might mean that he's wasting time. That he says, okay, whatever it is. The point is, after that it says, obviously you see from that a Beinoni can't be half mitzvah and half of it.
Because
otherwise, what do you mean? Kol shev shalach v'torah v'ena oisik is, and already we're calling him kibbara shem baza kikoris. Obviously, you're not going to say that if he has other mitzvahs to counterbalance that, he's called a Beinoni. The Gemara here was clearly calling him a low level rosh. Rabbi Shmuel learns that Ovid Avodas Kechavim. Rabbi Shmuel says that Kidvar Hashem Baza refers to somebody who worships Avodah Zarah. Why is that called Dvar Hashem? Because it's a Dibra, Anochi and Lo'yi Lachar, the two Dibras that the Eved just spoke directly to the Jewish people. Kidvar Hashem, in other words, as opposed to the rest of the mitzvahs, we heard only through Moshe Rabbeinu. My
mashmah.
I mean, all of them are accepted in one way or the other, but the one in Kol Shev Shalas Vater Rabbeinu Oisik is actually brought in the Rambam and in Shulchan Aruch. That's not a person needs to make a living. That's not the epshalach v'atera means during the time when a person is able to learn.
V'atera means involved.
But no, because for example, if you're making a living, that's also if you're making a living in order to be able to have the chance to learn Torah and in order to be able to have the chance to give tzedakah and support your family and send your kids to school and whatever, then that's all also part of being oisik v'torah. We're talking about a person who's just wasting time.
I always heard that it's someone who's completely dedicated.
There are different levels of oisik v'torah. There are different levels of oisik v'torah, I mean, I'll read you what the Rambam says on it. It's in Hilchos Talmud Torah. Kidvar Hashem Baza, Zeh Shalei Shgiach Al Divrei Torah Kolikur, somebody who doesn't pay attention to Divrei Torah at all. V'chein, and similarly, Kol She'ef Shalei Lask V'Torah V'Ein Oisik, or somebody who's able to be Oisik in Torah and is not. Oy, and he goes on with other examples of somebody who did learn and then he goes and starts dealing with the shtusim of the world and ignores his learning. So all those, yeah. My mashmal, where does Rabbi Shmuel get that Kidvar Hashem Baza specifically refers to worshiping Avodah Zarah? The Tanah of Rabbi Shmuel, Kidvar Hashem Baza, Zama Vaza, Dibur, Shunamu Lele Moshe Mitzinai. This is the person who is Mavaza, who tweets lightly the statement that was told to Moshe at Har Sinai, and that Moshe was that the Jewish people actually were told directly at Har Sinai. So that's Dvar Hashem. Okay. More on this topic of learning and the importance of learning and in particular of reviewing your learning. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kofayma, kol aloymed Torah ve'ena chozer aleha, a person who learns Torah and does not review it. Doim ala adam shezireya ve'ena kotzu, he's like a person who plants and never harvests. Rabbi Yeshua, kol aloymed Torah v'shach. Yeah? No, but the fact that he learned means that he planted. But yeah. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm called Loimer Torah Meshachar. Rabbi Yeshua says that if somebody learns Torah and then forgets it, Doimer Leisha Shia Ledes Vekeveres. He's like a woman who gives birth and then buries her children. So they talk about different nuances, what's the difference between Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha's statement and Rabbi Yeshua's statement. It can be talking about the Maharal talks about that one is talking about the Iyun and one is talking about the Pekir of Torah. there's one of them is talking about where the person never reviewed at all, and the other one is where like he reviewed it maybe a couple of times, but now like he deliberately goes about trying to forget it, kind of like mashakha, like he distracts right. himself, but not no he distracts himself and winds up forgetting what he learned because yeah. Like I said, it's a good habit. So, Falashachach Dabar from the Mishnah, so yeah. Rabbi Akiva, in this connection about reviewing your learning, Zamer b'chol yoyim, Zamer b'chol yoyim. Sing every day, sing every day. Which means, in other words, Rashi says, it means even if your learning is already as familiar to you as a song, you should keep on reviewing it. And that way, lo'osid lava, lo'olam haba, you'll be able to sing, you'll be able to enjoy your olam haba. There's many, many other explanations among the Rishonim and Achronim what the Zamer B'chol Yoyim means. It means, for example, that one of the explanations is a song. You're never gonna get the full effect of a song, let's say, just by reading music. You're gonna get the full effect by actually singing it. The same way, in other words, it's not just enough to play it or singing it or whatever. Yeah, the same way. In other words, when it comes to Torah, you can't just be looking at it. You have to actually be reviewing it. You have to actually be saying it verbally. And again. It also includes the idea of learning it with a tune. As we know, the idea that learning it with a tune helps you retain it. And the Gemara talks elsewhere in Megillah about the importance of Koda with Zimra, of reading the Torah with using a tune. They also talk about the idea that Zamer also includes cutting off. Like, it means you use it as a Zamer B'Shvachim, for example. So it means the idea you learn Torah, it cuts off the clippers. It also includes Zamer B'chol Yom, includes Saint Tillim. Yeah. Okay. Amar of Yitzchak Bar Redeemer, Maikra, where do you have a pasuk that expresses this idea of Sam Sofer says an interesting thing about it. He says the letters Zamer in the Aleph phase come before, respectively, the letters Ches, Nun, and Shin, which can be rearranged to spell Nachash. So Zamer B'chol Yom, you learn Torah and repeat it constantly, that destroys the Nachash as in the Nachash HaKamoni, the Etara. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Redeemer, Maikra, where you have a pasuk that expresses this idea of the importance of reviewing your learning all the time. Shenema, the pasuk says, Nefesh Omel Omlaloi, a Nefesh, a person who Omel, who works hard, Omlaloi, it works for him, Ki Achach Olav Pihu, because he saddles his mouth. Because he made the Torah be like a saddle for his mouth. Like he always makes sure, like there's like a saddle is always on a donkey, that words of Torah are always on his mouth. So what does it mean? What's nefesh omel omloloi? It means who omel b'makom zeh. It means the person can be working in one place. The Torah is working for him elsewhere. Namely, Rashi says, once a person learns Torah, then the Torah itself goes and then pleads by the Eidosh. So Rashi says what it means is the Torah itself goes and pleads by the Eidoshev, please let this person have a chance to learn Torah on a deeper level. Because he made the Torah for his mouth like a saddle for a junkie, constantly with it. And also Rashi says, Shekofach Pihu al Divrei Torah, like he's bending and using his mouth for Divrei Torah, and therefore he deserves that the Torah works on his behalf. And therefore, to return to what you were asking about a person making a living or whatever, that's also a melaflood makamacha. It means even when he's physically makamacha, he's not able to learn because he's got to make a living or whatever, the Torah is still working on his behalf because he considered it important enough to do at the time that he was able to. Oh, Rashi gives another explanation of Zamer B'chol Yom. It means that just like the more you review a song, the easier you know it. The same way, the more you learn Torah over and over again, then you become more familiar with it. What?
It'll be like breathing.
Yeah.
No, it's not like breathing.
Yeah. But no, like breathing. You said. Yeah.
Oh, breathing.
Hello. One Sadiq test on the day is about 8 lines from the top. I don't know. Somebody just joined. But, either Ellie or Yaakov would be my guess. All right. Fine. 4 lines from the top, actually. Okay. Omarabalava. Kol Adam La'omol Nivra. Every person was created in the world in order to work hard. Shenemaki Adam La'omol Yula. The pasuk says, man is born to toil. However, we wouldn't know from that pasuk whether a person is created in order to work with their mouth, like to speak, or whether they're talking about, or whether we're talking about omel of malacha, of doing work. But we have the pasuk that we quoted before about making making like a saddle for your mouth. So obviously, it must be that a person is created to work with their mouth. However, we still wouldn't know what kind of thing are you expected to do with your mouth. What were you put in this world to do with your mouth? To learn Torah or to talk? Well, let's learn the Gemara first, and we'll talk about what would be the Ava Amina person that's put in this world to talk. So wait. But when you have a different pasuk that says this sefer Torah should not leave your mouth, you have to say that a person was put in this world, that a person was created for the sake of toiling in Torah. So what does this mean? What's the hava amina? What's the hava amina that a person could have been put in this world from malacha or for sicha? So there's, again, a lot of different explanations among the mafarshim. Among the various explanations, they talk about that malacha would mean the shalach kodesh, for example, talks about malacha would mean maisim tovim, not just regular work like a person goes about their 9-to-5 job. Malacha would mean the malacha of doing mitzvahs, and sicha would be davening. But the Gemara is saying, fine, those are important things, but nevertheless, Torah still outweighs all of them. The primary purpose a person is put in this world for is to learn Torah. In Chassidus, there's a mimer from the Friedrich Rebbe that discusses this Gemara, and he explains over there the word. There's also a sicha where the Rebbe then expands on it in Chedek Tetzvav, actually on this week's parasha. The Medrash says on this week's parasha that Avram, remember, the Eibushah tells him Lech Lecha Me'aretzcha. He doesn't know what land he's going to. So he's passing through the various lands over there, and he sees people eating and drinking and having a fun time. He says, I hope my portion is not in these lands. I don't want to be among such people. Then he comes to Eretz Canaan, and he sees people are working hard, and Eivishta, I hope I have a share in this land. And sure enough, Eivishta tells him, L'zarecha etenes aretz hazot. So what's the great importance of malacha? So that explains in that sicha. So first of all, in the Mimer, it talks about the idea, malacha, aside from its true, malacha means maisim tovim, sure, but in one sense, malacha taka means working for a living, in the sense that it's important, would be one of the main things the person is in this world for, is to do business honestly. We know, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, when a person is taken in front of the Beis Din Shamayil after 120, one of the first things they're asked is the sauce of an asata b'emunah. Did you do business honestly? So there's that. In a more general b'emunah means honestly, yeah. In a more general way, then the Rebbe could ever goes on to say that malacha also means b'chol avoda sabirurim, the whole avoda of taking the world and refining it. So even you're doing your 9-to-5 job. But first of all, you're doing it honestly, and second of all, you're doing it in a way that you're mevara berurim. You're doing it in a way that you're doing it for the sake of avoda, for the sake of serving Eibishter. So that's malacha. Sicha again, taka would mean davening, and both of those are important things. But Torah still outweighs all of them. So the Rebbe goes on in that sicha to talk about the idea of why taka is odom omo yuvalid, and basically the reason is because the Eibishter wanted that a human being should be similar to him. The Eibishter is the ultimate mashpia. We have to be mashpia also. The only way to do that is that you're accomplishing something in the world. You can't just be getting nama de kisufa. You can't just be getting a free lunch.
The ultimate shalom Torah and kemach in Torah.
Fine, but a person still has to realize what their primary purpose in the world is. The Rebbe goes on to talk about in that sicha, the reason is because malacha and davening are both from the Sirusa Belasata. They both come from us, which fine, very nice. You're doing your avoda, that's great. But ultimately you need something milamaila. You need something all encompassing milamaila to bring it up to a higher level, otherwise you can only reach as high as you yourself can. That's what Torah accomplishes.
The Rebbe said that the whole purpose of a Jew is to come to this world to help another Jew.
There is that, and that's part of malacha. What we're saying, you can help another Jew through Torah as well. Torah doesn't just mean you sit in the Dalet Amos Shalalacha and learn for yourself. As we said on Amud Aleph, it's important you need to be teaching other people as well. That's also, yeah.
Okay.
And if you can, I mean, the Rebbe used to say, you know, right, if all you know is Aleph, teach another Yid that Aleph, right? Behind the Omer Rava, this is like what Rava said. Kulu gufi drupaski ninu. Everybody, all gufim in the world, they're all created for labor. They're all created for tircha. Drupaski actually says is malashin techonim. They all have to be busy. Everybody is in the world to be busy. The Aruch has a different explanation. Drupaski means like containers. Happy is the person whose their tircha, their labor, or what they're a container for, is Torah. This is, you have the famous expression Ashri Misha Amolid Torah, similar to that Adam La Amo Yulad. Ashri, the Gemara says, I think in Brachas, Ashri Misha Amolid Torah, given that everybody is in this world in order to work, then happiest is the person whose work is in Torah. But again, it doesn't. We're not talking about again that that has to have to be a person who's sitting and learning, constantly. It can be a Baal Asik or whatever, but that he understands that Torah is the most important thing, and then does it, and whatever he has, whenever he has time, all of his work is for that purpose. And when he has time, then yes, and he sets aside time for it. Okay. The pasuk says, "V'noyef isha chasarle." There's a pasuk in Mishlei that says a person who is mezamna with a woman is lacking in heart. What does that mean? Omer Shlokish, zal lemed Torah l'prakim. This refers to somebody who learns Torah occasionally. So what's the point? Rashi says it's similar to somebody who's mezana, like he has no wife, so just whenever there's a woman available, he's mezana with her. So that's similar to how lemed Torah l'prakim, a person who learns Torah on occasion, when he gets around to it, kind of.
Nothing permanent.
Yeah, right. There's other explanations, by the way, in Hayom Yom. It brings that in Gan Eden they learned that Tzemach Tzedek brings that in Gan Eden in Hayom Yom for Yud Aleph Elul, that in Gan Eden they learned this word Halomet Torah L'Prakim in a more positive sense, that it means a person who learns Torah in a way that it takes him apart, that is, it takes apart what he is and like reassembles him in the proper way. Reb Hillel Parasher once said at a Chassidish Fabrengen or in one of his Maimarim or whatever, he said a different explanation in the negative sense of Halomet Torah L'Prakim, that the Gemara is saying over here, means a person who learns Torah in a way that doesn't end up connecting the Torah Milamayla with it, his Torah Milamata, but rather in a way that disassociates them. And he said, by the way, and he went on to say there's different levels in that. He said that, for example, what might be considered Torah L'Shma for us wouldn't be considered Torah L'Shma, let's say at the Alter Rebbe's level, he says. So there's many different levels of it. Shenema, as the pasuk says, kisishmer and bevitnacha. As the pasuk says, kinoyim kisishmer and bevitnacha. It'll be pleasant when you keep the Torah in your stomach. Yikoinu yachdav asvasecha, when it is established together on your lips, meaning a little bit together, like it's an ongoing thing, not just occasionally when I get around to it. Tanarabanan. Going back now, okay, so we discussed the various things of Kidvar Hashem Baza, and that led us into this digression over here about the importance of learning and teaching Torah. So now back to V'anefesh HaShetasa B'Yad Rama, the beginning of that pasuk, the previous pasuk rather, before the pasuk Kidvar Hashem Baza, the pasuk starts off by saying V'anefesh HaShetasa B'Yad Rama, a person who acts high-handedly against the Torah, then the V'nechasa. So what is Vanefesh Ashat Yad Rama? The Menashe ben Chizkiah. This refers to Menashe, King Menashe, the son of Chizkiah. We'll talk about him more extensively later in the parak. Yeah, he was a Rasha. Shoya Yoshev Adorish Ba'agodis Shal Dofi. He would sit and darshan about Hagodis, about the stories in the Torah, Dofi. He would say that there's a flaw in them. Like he would argue that there's psukim that are unnecessary, and therefore maybe also then he'd use that as a basis for like making up his own drashas. Haggadah Shel Dofi implies like he would make up his own tendentious, shall we say, drashas about that.
We said that in Tachton, don't we?
What? Yeah, we were Zbanu Dofi. Yeah, we spoke improper things. Yeah. So yeah.
What is it exactly, Dofi?
Dofi, that's basically Dupi. It means like talking out of both sides of one's mouth, or it means improper or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Omar, like he would say, what did Moshe have nothing better to write in the Torah than, for example, the description of the family of the Chorim over there that Esav's family intermarried into, the sister of Loit and Timnah, and Timnah is a concubine to Eliphaz, the son of Esav. Like, why did Moshe have to bother writing such things? Obviously, he's claiming it's unnecessary, and therefore we can use them for whatever tendentious drushes we want. Or, for example, Vayelech Reuven b'meik tzirchitim. Why does the Torah have to describe, let's say, that Reuven went and found the Vayim tzedudoyim, when it says that Reuven went during the wheat harvest and found Dudoyim basadeh? Why does it have to tell the story at all? Or Marshall says, he might have been asking, not why does it have to tell the story at all, but why does it specifically have to mention that it was during the wheat harvest? Same thing with the previous one. Fine. Let's say, for example, it's important to know that Timnah was Eliphaz's Pelegesh. Why is it important to know that she was Loitzan's sister? Later on, in a few lines, we're going to explain Taka why. But Menashe used to do such things. He would mock the Torah in that way, like, look at this, the Torah has unnecessary things. Yotza Basko Vamer Loitza. Basko came and answered him, came from Tilim, Teshev Ba'achicha Tadabir. You're sitting and speaking against your brother, meaning your fellow Jews, in particular, Barsha says Moshe Rabbeinu, who gave us the Torah. But then Imcha Titen Dofi, you're saying that it is Dofi, you're saying there's something improper in the son of your mother, meaning because all the Shvatim are descended from, we all come from different mothers, but still, I mean, Levi, who Moshe came from, and Yehuda, which is what you, Menashe, come from, are from the same mother. They're both from Leah. So what are you mocking Moshe as if like he made up these pesukim for no good reason, when you know perfectly well that Eivishter gave that Moshe didn't make them up himself. He was dictated them by the Eivishter, and Eivishter had a reason for them. And the pasuk continues, Elo Asi, so you've done these things, Vecharashti, and all this time I've been quiet, but Dimisa, now because of that, you're thinking, Heyos Eya Kamocha. The Eivishter is saying, they say, Bachtel, saying to Menashe, Dimisa, now you're thinking, Heyos Eya Kamocha. I'm just like you, fine. You write something that is unnecessary sometimes. You're thinking I'm the same way. Therefore, I will demonstrate to you, Ve'ercha Leinecha, and I will prove it in front of your eyes that you're wrong and everything in Torah has a purpose.
How did you do that?
We'll see in a few lines. The Gemara is going to tell us back of what these psukim are for. But all of the Furish B'Kabbalah about a person like that, like Menashe, that says in Tanakh, Hoi, woe, Moshcheya oven b'chav le'yashav, woe to those who pull along the Averis with ropes of nothingness, meaning in the words Marsha says, like this is nothing, like he's claiming these psukim are there in the Torah for nothing. So that's hashav, for emptiness, yeah. B'chav voice ta'eg l'chata, and like the avoyt is a thicker rope, so like the thick ropes of a wagon that are used to pull a wagon, they pull along chata the aveirus. So the question is, the Gemara interjects, my kavoyt the egla, what's the point of mentioning first a regular rope and then an extra thick rope? I'm going to ask you, because that's how the Yetzirah is. The Yetzirah b'tchila doymel l'chut shel kuvia. The Yetzirah starts out as like a thin little string. Kuvia, the Aruch says it means something like, it means like a spider web. So it starts out like very thin. All of a sudden, eventually, if it keeps on giving into the Yetzer Hara, it eventually becomes thick, like the rope of a wagon. So the point is, in other words, you started out with only Chavle Hashav, and now it winds up being Chavoy Te'eglo, like the thick rope. Rashi, by the way, says on the Chavle Hashav. Yeah, Rashi, by the way, says on B'chavle Hashav that the verse is, Marsha is saying Shav is like he's claiming these sukkim are unnecessary. Rashi says the point is you're not even gaining anything from these Averis if you're as Menashe. You're claiming these sukkim are unnecessary. What are you even gaining out of that? Okay, fine. Dasan Allah Miyas. Okay, since we mentioned these questions, Taka, Achos Loitan Timna Maihi. Taka, what is the point that the Pasuk has to mention that Loitan's sister was Timna? Loitan is one of the Chorim. So the Pasuk, at the end of Parashas Vayishlach, the Torah starts listing for us Esav's various children and descendants. Then the Torah starts out, and in that it mentions that Timna was a Pelegish to Eliphaz, who was one of the sons of Esav. Then after that, the Torah spends about a dozen psukim listing the descendants of Seir HaChorim, who Seir and his family lived in the area that became Edrei, where afterwards Esav and his family moved into that area and conquered them and intermarried with them, etc. Why Taka do we need that? Why does it have to mention that Timna, that Loitan's sister is Timna, Maihi? What's the point of mentioning it? Like this. Timna bas Malachim Avoi. Timna was a daughter of King. Aluf Loitan Aluf Timna, because in the psukim over there, it lists the chiefs. It says Chief Loitan, Chief Timna. The definition of an aluf is it's an uncrowned king. So they're not wearing a crown, but other than that, to all intents and purposes, they're king. So therefore we see Loitan as a king, Timna, okay, some of them approach him and say Timna over there, maybe it's a different Timna, but the point, maybe Timna over there is a different Timna, but the point is, if she's a sister of Loitan, then she's descended from royalty. Now this Timna wanted to become a Giyotis. She came to Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, not necessarily Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov themselves, but in other words, for their descendants. But like Kiblua, and they didn't want to accept her as a Giyotis. So she decided then in that case, I'll become a concubine of Eliphaz ben Esav. Omra, because she said to herself, Mutav tehe shifcha l'umazu, better I should be a slave woman by this nation. In other words, at least Eliphaz is, Eliphaz is not from the Jewish people, but at least Forti is a descendant of Avraham and Yitzchak. And he's a nephew of Yaakov. At least that's where I'll be related to them. But I take Gvira l'Uma Acheres rather than being a queen in some other nation. That's why she became a Eliphaz of Kilagish. After Ytak, 1 second. Nafak minah molest the Tsarina l'Israel. So out of her, eventually, the prophet says that Kibna was a Kilagish of Eliphaz, and she gave birth to Amalek. So Amalek came from her Tsarina l'Israel, who caused the Jewish people a great deal of sorrow. My time, Ytak, why did it end up that Amalek is her descendant? Because Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, Taka should not have distanced her. They should have accepted her. Now, why Taka did they not accept her? What was their Havamina? So different first and talk about different possibilities. One of them is, first of all, Rashi explains they Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or whoever. So Avram, not necessarily. So Yitzchak and Yaakov, or maybe it means, maybe it's B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So yeah. Anyway, so why Taka? So there's a number of different explanations. First of all, Rashi on the Pesukim explains on the basis of an analysis of the Pesukim over there, and ultimately based on the Medrash, that Timna was actually a Mamzerim. So therefore, they may not have wanted to accept her because what are you doing?
She would not have been a Mamzerim. She was a Shiksa.
This is before Matan Torah. There's no... But nevertheless, though, so one argument is because she was born from a flawed lineage like that, because
what happened to the daughters of Lot, you can say the same thing.
Okay, and the daughters of Lot didn't become Geras, their descendants did. So anyway, that might have been a reason, but then in that case, we're saying that's not right. The fact that she may be a Geras, I mean, she may be a Mamzeres, fine, let's say, for example, her status as a Mamzeres would exist, arguably, you could say maybe it exists even if she becomes a Geras, fine, she can't marry a Ben Yisrael, but fine, she can marry a fellow Ger or whatever, they shouldn't have distanced her altogether. That's one explanation. Another explanation is they realize that she's only coming to become a geyurdis for purposes of marriage, which the halacha is that you're not allowed to accept a geyur for that purpose. Nevertheless, though, on the other hand, the halacha is that the diyevet, if a person was accepted as a geyur on those grounds, it's still a valid geyurus. So therefore, again, they should have accepted it. So there's a few different explanations. The point is, there we see, after all, so here Menashe is claiming that there's no reason for these psukim. There's a big reason for these psukim. We learn an important thing from it.
Where do we learn all this history? It's not in the Chumash.
So the psukim are there in Chumash. The Chachamim had the Kabbalah. What exactly happened?
Where did they take it?
What do you mean, where did they take it? Said by Seychelles, they took the rest of Torah Shabbat. The Ebrister gave us Torah Shabbat, he gave us Torah Shabbat as well, and the Chachamim analyzed the Psukim and then had the Kabbalah, what they had learned, and this is what they learned. What about Vayelech Reuven b'nei Ketuchis, and what's the importance of mentioning the fact that Reuven went during the time of the wheat harvest, and found the Dudoyim. What's the point of mentioning the story B'chlal, or what's the point of mentioning that it was Dafka during the wheat harvest? Barshaw says, actually, by the way, though, you do have a certain remez to this whole story in the very fact that the Pasuk B'chlal has to mention that Timna was a Pelegish to Esav. None of the other children of Esav, I mean, rather, the children of Esav, fine, it says that it says which wives of Esav they came from. But for example, when it says Eliphaz's other children, it doesn't say who his wife was. Why does it Dafka have to mention that Timna was a Pelegish? Because of the story. Why does it have to mention Dafka that was during the wheat harvest? From here we learn that Tzaddikim will not stretch their hands against Gezel. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says that the point is, B'nei Tzirchitim implies it was after the field had been harvested. Only then did Reuven go into the field, because before that it would be off limits. Marshall says
different,
and then he came afterwards and found these Dudoyim when everything is harvested, and then he found the Dudoyim over there. Marshall says differently. Marshall says the verse is that the wheat harvest was going on at that time, but yet he didn't take any wheat. All he took was Dudoyim, which are Hefka. The Gemara is going to tell that in the next line. Mayim to Dudoyim Basad, they're my Dudoyim, so what are Dudoyim? So there's a few different explanations. Omer Rab Yavruchi, Rashi says it's Yavruchi, which Rashi says, I don't know what Yavruchi are. The Evan Ezra, who lived in Arabic-speaking countries, says they have the same name, Yavruch, in Arabic. And in Arabic, that's the name for the mandrake plant. It's a plant from the same family as tomatoes and eggplants and a number of other families. In those times, it was accepted that this plant has fertility properties. So therefore, that's why Rachel wanted it, because she was childless all the time.
It was a plant, and they used it as an amulet?
As an amulet, or they ate it, maybe, or whatever. No, not a bizarre. You're not believing in any other power. This is like taking medicine. When you take a Tylenol, is it a bizarre? No. So Reuben gathered it for Leah, and Rachel asked Leah for it, because you already have children, and I don't. Okay, anyway, that's one explanation. Levi Omer Sigli. Levi says that the Dudoyim are Sigli, which are violet. Rabbi Yonasan says they're Svisky, which is some other kind of Psalmim.
Also,
maybe also with such properties. Yeah. Okay. Honorable Alexandri, getting back to the importance of learning Torah that we were discussing before, Honorable Alexandri, kol ha'osek b'Torah l'shma, a person who is involved in learning Torah l'shma, meisim shalom b'pamal yashamayla u'pamal yashamata. He causes peace among the pamal yashamayla, the retinue up in Shemayim, meaning the malachit, the retinue, the pamal yashamayla literally means like a family, it means like the group, l'mayla, meaning the malachim, the sarim. It's actually related to the word family. Familia, really, it would be like the word family in English.
It's a Greek word?
Greek, Latin, I don't know, whatever. Oh, Pamalia Shamata, and also in the retinue down below, meaning among the Jewish people. Shenema, O Yachzik Ramozi, as the Pasuk says, if the Jewish people were to hold on to my strength, meaning the Torah, which is called Oiz, Hashem Oiz La'am Yitzin, Yachzik Shalom Li, Shalom Yachzik Li. Peace, he'll make peace for me, peace he'll make for me. So we see two different kinds of peace, Lamaila and Lamata.
What do you mean, peace, Lamaila?
So what does it mean, peace, Lamaila, and peace, Lamata? So you have among the various explanations, or it means, for example, that this way there won't be any Makatrigim up above, everybody will be at peace as far as that this person should have good, and the Jewish people in general should have good, and Lamata, that brings about peace between the Talmid Chachamim. There's many Maimarich Siddus beginning with one in the Kodesh Torah, the original Maimar Hecholtu, that discusses the idea that Shalom of Pamal Yishamayla implies that you're joining together the Yud K of the Eivishter's name, and Pamal Yishamata refers to the Vav K of the Eivishter's name, and then Alter Rebbe goes on to explain over there that this refers to not only at the Ruchniyistika level in the Olam, in those higher worlds, but also within the person himself, that it creates a peace within his own Chesed and Gvura, and makes it, yeah. There's also the idea that it makes peace not just within Pamal Yishamayla and within Pamal Yishamata, but also it makes peace between them, it joins them together. Rav says, a person who learns Torah Lashma, ki lebona paltu in shamayla v'shamata. Such a person is like he built the palace up above and below. In other words, he built the heaven and the earth. Shenema, the Torah says, va'ostim dvarei b'ficha, I placed my words in your mouth, the Eivishta says, uvetzel yodi kisisicha, and I covered you with the shadow of my hand, lintoya shamayim v'lisod aret, to plant the heavens and to establish the earth. Which means, also, Marshall says the vote is, when a human being builds a palace, you've got to build from the bottom up. The Eivishter doesn't have to be created according to one opinion anyway, Shemayim before Arif. A person who learns Torah Lashma is on that level. They're able to do things beyond Teva. Amr Shlokish, or Rabbi Yechon, Amr Afnegin, Akola Elam Kolei, also a person who learns Torah Lashma, protects the whole world. Because the pasuk continues, I covered you with the shadow of my hand. So, like Kaviyachol, the Eivishter put the shadow of protection from any dangers. The Levi Amach Makarav Tagula, and Levi says not only that, he brings close to the Gula. Shenemar, the Lemer Letzian Amiata. That same pasuk continues. In Torah Shemayim Beli Torah, the Lemer Letzian Amiata, and to say to Tzion, you are my people, which is ultimately going to happen when Mashiach comes.
That's how he brings
the Geula. That's how he brings the Geula by learning Torah Lashma. And by the way, you see the importance of Geula in that Geula is each one is adding to the previous one. So not only he's Mesim Shalom Pamal Yishamayla Pamal Yishamata, not only he's like building the heavens and the earth, not only he's protecting the world, even on top of that, he's bringing the Geula closer.
Which is the main thing.
A person who teaches another person's son Torah, the pasuk considers it as he made that person. Shenema, as we have in this week's parasha, that's a nefesh asher osu b'charan, the souls that they, Avraham and Sarah, made in Charan. They didn't make anybody, but they taught them Torah. Rashi brings it on the pasuk, and therefore it's considered as if they made them. They taught to Avraham to the men, Sarah to the women, and they brought them tachas kanfei hashchina. As the Rambam describes it in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, that you have after Avraham himself discovered about the Eivishter, then he started gathering people, he and Sarah, and they built up a whole huge crowd of people who believe in the Eivishter.
That's Chabad and
Chara. Yes, exactly.
Whatever those people after this question.
Well, I mean, the Rambam goes on to explain that during the time in Mitzrayim, even the Jewish people almost lost it, and just the Eivishter had to bring them out of Mitzrayim at the last possible moment. Some of those people, maybe Taka became the Eid of Ras.
Most of them kept it.
So I guess for a period of time they kept it, but I mean we don't know for sure what happened to them because very likely most, if not all of them, were lost during the time of the giant. Even among the Jewish people themselves, many of them were lost in the giant. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Lazar, says, Kilo Asan Medivei Torah, also a person who teaches another person's son Torah, is as if he made the actual words of the Torah. Shenemo, Shmautim et Zivra Abrisazois, Vasti Samoitim, as the Pasuk says, you should guard the words of this Torah, meaning the words that you're speaking to somebody else, Vasti Samoitim, and then it's considered as if you made them. Vasti Samoitim literally means you should do that, but we can also understand it to mean you make them.
As if you made the Torah.
Remade the Torah. Yeah. Rava Amakilo Asoy La'atma. Rava says it also, it's as if the person has created himself. Actually, Rashi says Kilo Asoy La'oitzer Dvar Mitzvah. That means as if he did that mitzvah himself. No, actually, that's a little later. That's the next thing. Sorry. Kilo Asoy La'atma, as if he created himself. So now he made himself like into a human being by doing this. The same politics that says you should make them, Al-Tikru Oisem, Al-Atem, not just Oisem them, but Atem, Aleph Tov Mem, you made yourself.
The
Vav
doesn't exist.
The Vav doesn't exist, yes. Kolam Ases Chaveir L'Dvar Mitzvah, if a person causes somebody else to do a mitzvah, he encourages him to do it, or tells him to do it, whatever, Mal Olav HaKosov Kilo Asav. The Pasuk considers it as if he himself did that very same mitzvah. That's what Rashi was referring to, by the way, that Rashi that I just quoted by mistake, it goes over here, that as if he himself did that very mitzvah himself. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Eivishter tells Moshe, that when you come to strike the rock in Rephidim, to make water come, take along your stick with which you hit the Nile River to bring about Makkah, Dam. Moshe, he called. We know Moshe didn't hit the river. Aaron, he called. We know that Aaron hit it. Because Moshe caused Aaron to do it, because he told him the instructions to do it. The prophet considers it as if Moshe did it himself. Okay. Then we mentioned before in the Braisa, or in the Mishnah for that matter, one of the categories of the people who loses their chelik, blah, 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 is apikoros. So now we have to define that. By the way, where the word apikoros comes from, there's two different understandings among the Persian. Some of them derive it from some of them say that's basically a Hebrew word, that it derives from the Shurish pokar, which means to be careless with, like so it's related somewhat to the word hester also. It's like a person is careless with, like he thinks it's okay to go beyond bounds, kind of. The other explanation is it comes from the name of a Greek philosopher named Epicurus, who held basically that the purpose of a person, the primary purpose of a person in this world is to have pleasure. Nothing higher than that. Okay. Anyway, what is the definition of an Epicurus? Rav Rab Chanina Amitavai, both Rav and Rab Chanina say, Zamavaza Tamar Chachamim. This refers to somebody who makes fun of Tamar Chachamim. Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Shoban Levi, Amri, Zamavaza Chaveira Bifnei Tamar Chachamim. It means something else. It means somebody who makes fun of another person in front of Tamar Chachamim. Which means, in other words, therefore, he doesn't consider, if he had respect for the Tamar Chachamim, he wouldn't do this in front of them. And for that matter, he would leave it if it's something that the person needs to be given most or whatever. He would have the Chachamim do it rather than do it himself.
Mavim
Pnei Chaver B'Rabim is a different thing. That's we said if only the person is regular about it. He was saying the very fact that he does it in front of a Tamar Chacham itself is a problem.
Fine,
I can understand if you say that you make fun, according to Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shurban Levi, if you say you mavaza somebody else in front of a Tamar Chacham, apikoros habi, and you're defining that's the definition of an apikoros, well then mavaza tamar chacham asmo could be the definition of megalaponim b'torah shalai kalacha. We said before another one who loses his chelik l'olam haba is megalaponim b'torah shalai kalacha, somebody who's chutzpidik against the Torah. Fine, so we'd have two different things. You make fun of the tamar chacham himself, you're being chutzpidik against the Torah. You make fun of somebody else in front of a tamar chacham, that's called apikoros. It's two different definitions.
Because
we said that then it shows a lack of respect for the Tamar Chachamim. Because you wouldn't do such a thing in front of somebody who you respected. You wouldn't be mavaza somebody else in front of somebody who you respected. So therefore, yes. El Lamanda Omar, but according to Rav and Rav Chanina, who say mavaza Tamar Chacham Atmi Apikoros Abi, if you say that being mavaza Tamar Chacham himself is the definition of an Apikoros, then Megala Ponim Atarda could go in my. Then what is an example of Megala Ponim Atarda? What is an example of somebody who's chutzpitik against the Torah? The answer is you go in Menashe ben Chizkiah, like we said before, but Menashe, who made fun of the Torah itself, but there's unnecessary things in it.
That's
So that would be it. So that we would say that's that would be the definition of megala ponim atoda shalaykala. So in other words, it's like this. According to Rav and Rav Chanina, you have the definition of megala ponim atoda shalaykala is like Menashe. Abikodas is mevaza tamid chacham. Mevaza is somebody else in front of a tamid chacham. They don't address that. Maybe it's not considered so terrible according to that. According to Rav Yechonon and Rav Shimon Levi, Menashe and Chizkiyah we're not even dealing with. That's for sure. That's for sure beyond down. Mm-hmm. Apikoros would be somebody who's mevaza tamid chachamim themselves. Megalaponim atorah shalai kalacha would be somebody who's mevaza tamid chachamim themselves. Apikoros would be somebody who's mevaza somebody else in front of a tamid chacham.
Megalaponim atorah
shalai kalacha would be somebody who's chutz bedik to the Torah, meaning to the tamid chacham, by making fun of them themselves. Fine. The ikka demasni la sefa. On the other hand, some learn that this machloikas between Rav and Rav Chanina versus Rav Yechon and Rav Shimon Levi is referring to the sefa. When we say megalaponim atorah, what is the definition of megalaponim atorah? According to the second version, the question isn't what's the definition of anakotas, the question is what's the definition of megalaponim atorah. So according to that second version, Rav and Rav Chanina amizam avazah tamar chacham, Rav Yechon and Rav Shlokos Shammai is amizam avazah chaveda b'fenei tamar chacham. So again, we can ask, Mishleim l'mad d'amam avazah tamar chacham afna megalaponim atorah avi. Fine, then according to Rav and Rav Chanina, who say that making fun of the tamar chacham himself is the definition of megalaponim atorah, well then, avazah chaveda b'fenei tamar chacham apikoris avi. Then he's on a lesser level. He's not as bad. He's only an apikoris, not megalaponim atorah like halacha. But if you're going to say megalaponim atorah avi, but if you're going to say that even the lowest of these things that we're describing can be mevaza somebody else in front of a tamid chacham, not even the tamid chacham himself, already makes you megalaponim atorah apikoris kugen mar. Then what would be the definition of an apikoris, which has to be something less than that? The answer is Amar Rabbi Yosef kugen hani de amri. An example according to Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish, what would be considered an apikoris would be, for example, the people who say maya hanu lon rabbanon. So what good do the rabbanon do for us after all? L'didhu karu l'didhu tanu. They learn they learn mikra, they learn Tanakh, and they learn Mishnayos just for themselves. That what they do, their learning doesn't benefit us at all, and they don't realize that the whole world stands on learning Torah. Yeah, fine, but even so, they're saying it's basically just benefiting themselves. We're not getting any benefit in the world out of it, and they don't realize that yes, the world is benefiting a great deal from it. Oh, there's that. Yeah.
Give explanation.
That's a different. That's a different thing. Yeah. That's what we said before about Menashe doing that. That's what's according to the first explanation here. Okay. Amalei Abaya, hai megalaponim atorah namihu. Isn't such a person also megalaponim atorah shalai kalacha? Because they're denying something that explicitly says in the Torah. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, im loy bris yom v'layla, if it weren't for my bris day and night, meaning the Torah, which has to be studied by day and by night, chukas shemayim va'orit lay samdi, the Ebrisha says, I never would have set up the rules of heaven and earth. So therefore, yes, the world exists for the sake of Torah, in the schus of learning Torah. And Amar Rav Nachman talking about Hacha Nami Shmamina. In fact, you can also see it from another source. The Shenem of an Asasi L'Cholamaka Baburam. The Eibishter says to Sdoim that if there are 50 tzaddikim or whatever number in Sdoim, then I'll save the whole place for their sake. So we see that tzaddikim, Tamar Chachamim, the world is saved. People are saved for their sake. So if a person claims that Tamar Chachamim, their Torah doesn't benefit society, that's not just an apikurdus. On the face of it, isn't that megalaponim atorah shalai kalacha? Yeah, well, generally speaking, we would assume Tamar Chachamim are tzaddikim, and vice versa.
It's Megali Panim because what?
Because you're denying something that explicitly says in the Torah.
But you're not making fun of them.
No, but the point is, you're saying that I don't believe this pasuk. I don't believe this pasuk in Le'Brisi Yom V'Layla or whatever. Ella, no. Rather, what would be an example of an apikoris, therefore, to going to Yosef Kamei Rabbe, for example, a Talmud is sitting in front of his Rebbe, they digress to talking about something that was discussed in a different place, a different discussion in Torah. And the Talmud says, this is what we said over there. And he doesn't say, as he should, with respect for his Rebbe, this is what the Rebbe said in that place. So that shows, that makes him an apikoros. It shows a certain disrespectfulness. And again, that fits better with the idea that apikoros is Meloshon Pokar, like being disrespectful and careless, because he's being disrespectful and careless with the cover that he's supposed to have for his Rebbe.
I understand that the learning is
Let's say, for example, you're learning Sanhedrin, and in the course of the discussion, you come up with something, let's say, for example, that was previously discussed in Bava Kamma.
The student.
And the student says, we said this over there, rather than saying, Rebbe, you taught us over there, such and such.
He considered himself the same.
He considered himself on an equal level to
the
Rabbi.
Rabbi,
he can forgive, fine, but the Talmud himself still has a responsibility to you. Rava, Omar, Rava says a different definition of Apikurus. For example, the people from the household of Binyamin the doctor, Da'amri, these people like to say, Ma Yahanan lo Rabbanan. After all, what good do the Rabbanan do for us? Me'olam lo Shorulon Urva. We see the Rabbanan never were matter for us a raven. And they never said that a dove is also. In other words, there's no chiddush in what the Chachamim are teaching. Everything that we have, we can learn. Everything that they teach us, we can learn ourselves. So therefore, such people, Rava says, are considered apikorsim, because you have to learn Torah from a Rebbe. You have to accept that the Chachamim have what to teach you. So in fact, Rava himself, who gives this example, when these people from this household of this Binyamin the doctor would bring him a shaila in Treifus, and it turned out that it was Treif. If he would find a reason to be matter it, he would tell them, look, the text is the kashurin alachu urva. Look at this. You're thinking that Tamil Chachamim don't do us any benefit. Here you see something that you yourselves might have thought is like a raven, it's osir, and I'm telling you it's mutter. Do you see that Tamil Chachamim do bring you an actual benefit? There's something in Torah you wouldn't have known otherwise. Do you have a chazal time of the surah? And if he found a reason to say that it's treif, amalahu, you tell them, text is called asan alachu yoyna. See, here you go. I'm asking you a dove. You might have thought this is mutter like a dove, and I'm telling you that it's osir. So therefore, don't think that the Tamil Chachamim have nothing to teach you. Rapapa gives another example of an apikurus. Again, another example of somebody who's careless with the covered of whom they should be having covered for. Kagon to Omar Hani Rabbana, like the kind of person who says, those rabbis or that rabbi. Instead, the respectful way to say it would be Rabbi Seinu Shemakam Ploini, or Rebbe is in such and such a place. Rashi says another explanation. In Aramaic, you have two different words. You have Hani and you have a Hanhu. Rashi says if you say Hani Rabbanon, if you're talking about something, you're talking about a story involving the Rabbanon or whatever, and you say Hani Rabbanon, Hani would be sort of like, in English, it would be like saying these guys, the Rabbanon. As opposed to Hanhu Rabbanon, there were some of the Rabbanon, that would be a respectful way to say it. Okay, Rapapa Ishtali, Rapapa himself one time forgot, V'amukagin Hani Rabbanon, and he used that expression, Hani Rabbanon, the Ace of Batanisa, and he fasted afterwards to do tshuva for that. Here's some other examples. Here's another example of questions of can it be considered bordering an apikorsis. Levi bar Shmuel and Rav Huna bar Chia have a conversation with Pachas Sifri de Rav Yehuda. These two Amoraim, Levi bar Shmuel and Rav Huna bar Chia, were one time preparing or fixing mantles for the Sfarim in the yeshiva of Rav Yehuda, the Sfarim of Tanakh. Kimotu Megillas Esther, when they came to Megillas Esther, do we need a mantle for it? Amri, they said, Megillas Esther, like Boyim Tachas. This Megillas Esther does not need a mantle. So Rashi explains that they were asking it as a question. They're saying it as Rashi says, Kolaim of Boya. They're saying it kind of as a statement of fact. It seems this doesn't need a mitpachas. Amalui says ki haygavna nami mechzik ki aspirusa. That's also a shtickle of the courses to say like that. You should ask, does it need or does it not need? This doesn't need a mitpachas, right? So they should have asked the chachila, does it need a mitpachas or not? Not we're pretty sure it doesn't need a mitpachas, right? Marsha says, and the Yad Ramah says that actually the problem was a little bit differently. The problem is they're saying loy boy mitpachas. It doesn't need a mitpachas, right? Instead of saying does it need a Rabbi Yehuda, does it need a mitpachas or not?
Should you use the word
but? Well, it's not necessarily whether they use the word loy or not. It's how they say it. It's, are you asking it as a question? Tackle what is the answer, or are you saying we're pretty sure it doesn't, right?
What is it?
So therefore, it's mechziki afkirusa. It seems a little hefkeru. Marshawn and Gadramah talk about it a little bit differently. The problem wasn't with question. The problem was the fact that they used the expression ha Megillah Esther. Either the expression is that they used the expression this Megillah Esther, which again is like saying Hani Rabbanon, or maybe the idea is the very fact that they're assuming that Megillah Esther shouldn't need a mantle, in other words, that it shouldn't have the kedusha of the other Sifrei Kodesh, that you should be allowed to touch it barehanded, that itself is a shtickle of kedusha that you're not giving the Megillah the proper cover. With that said, by the way, there is some discussion among the poskim about the question, Taka, what is the din of Megillah Esther? What is the din about handling it with bare hands? And we know Hamad Vav, you see all the time when people handle the Megillah Esther every year, Purim time, they don't taka use a mitachas. So there are, I think the Chassam Sofer says that his Rebbe used to taka hold it with a mitachas on the basis of our Gemara over here. But on the other hand, you have many poskim who argue on the basis of Gemara and Megillah and other places that you taka don't need to, and that's taka the generally accepted minimum.
That's because the name of Hashem
Not necessarily because the name of Hashem isn't in it, but the Gemara discusses over there whether it was authorized to be one of the Kisvei HaKodesh or not. I mean, it was. We have it as one of the Chavdal Tzvarim, but still, the Gemara discusses over there the question. The Gemara discusses in Megillah and also in Yadayim. There's discussions about a couple of the different Tzvarim of Tanakh. All of them are Tzvarim of Tanakh, but the question is whether all of them have the same Kedusha as far as being Metame at the Yadayim. They make your hands Tame if you handle them with bare hands. There's an opinion over there that Megillah Esther is not. Okay.
The halacha is,
as I say, practically speaking, most people you see handle a Megillah Esther with bare hands, as opposed to a Sefer Torah, which you're not supposed to.
Not allowed to have them like a stick.
But even that, they don't necessarily handle only with a stick.
Mostly
they. Yeah, they still handle
both. Have a piece in the end which doesn't touch it. I mean, which has like a cloth on it.
I don't think so. But the Gemara in other places talks about the idea that a person is not supposed to hold a sefer with their bare hand. On the other hand, the Rambam specifically refers it to a sefer Torah. So that's another basis for it, that maybe a Megillah Esther is not on that level and you're allowed to handle it barehanded. Yeah.